For anyone faint of heart, or for anyone who doesn't like to hear graphic details of some of the heinous crimes of some of the biggest wastes of life this world has ever seen, I suggest stopping this podcast now. But if you, like me, can't get enough true crime and want to hear every detail to properly hate these vile creatures, then stay tuned for this very special episode. Today, I'm going to be covering one of the most useless human beings to ever live. His name was Gary Ridgway, also known as the Green River Killer. Now, this guy was always a bit of a dumbass, never really showed any potential, known to have an IQ in the low 80s. He murdered 49 young women and suspected of many more. In fact, he confessed to 71 altogether, but the bodies were never found for the other 22 women. He's only known to have kidnapped and murdered these women in a span of about 3 years, but it took almost 20 years to catch him. He was born in Salt Lake City, Utah in 1949. He had an extremely aggressive, domineering mother. He had a bedwetting problem till he was about 13, and his mother would personally wash his genitalia and punish him for it, which gave him deep sexual feelings for his mother, like many of these guys tend to have. At 16, he viciously attacked a 6-year-old, stabbed, and almost killed the kid, but he was never identified for this, so I suppose that's all hearsay. But seeing as what he did in the future, I don't have a hard time believing that this actually happened. In 1969, he joined the Navy. He got married the following year to a woman by the name of Claudia Burroughs, but his mom was still right there, basically a part of their relationship. She still dressed him, decided his every move, basically ran their entire life. He moved to Seattle right around this time, and while he was deployed, he regularly visited prostitutes and ended up with many STDs, and it made him blame and ultimately hate prostitutes. That's where all this kind of stemmed from, and that's not uncommon, actually. He came home eventually and found his wife had been dating someone else, so he left her. They were married for 2 years. A year later, somehow he got another woman to marry him. He got married to a woman named Marcia Brown, and they had a baby together. He dug deep into religion, almost to the point of forcing it on people. He still felt guilty about his sexual urges and desires, which made him angry, because in most religions, you're supposed to control those urges and bury them deep, deep down. He still visited prostitutes regularly, and in 1981, he was yet again divorced, largely because of his mother still being there in the relationship. In 1982, he had his first run-in with the law. He got busted soliciting a prostitute. It was a minor charge, but it didn't stop him from going on to pick up more women on the strip. On July 15th, 1982, he picked up a 16-year-old girl, drove her to a secluded area, and killed her. It was his first known victim. This was the start of his extremely heinous killing spree. In just 5 weeks, he picked up 5 more young girls. He raped and killed all 5 and dumped them in the Green River. That's when the Green River term and task force was formed. His main choice of murder was to strangle them from behind, so their chance of fighting back was reduced, because he's a little bitch-ass pussy, and that's what those people do. He was also known for revisiting the bodies and having sex with them, sometimes weeks or months later. There's a couple examples of this. Ted Bundy also kind of did something like this in the woods. By the end of 1982, his death toll was up to 11. As far as anyone knew, he was your average everyday neighbor. He seemed completely normal. He was a truck painter by trade. Many people said hi to him daily, like you would any neighbor. Could be anybody, just like anybody you see at the grocery store. He would pick many of his victims up around the SeaTac airport, which was very clever. It threw the investigation off hard. They started to wonder if it was someone traveling in and out. He seemed to take a break through the winter and started again that April in 1983. He picked up an 18-year-old girl and wanted sex, but her boyfriend slash pimp said that something didn't feel right about him, so he followed them, but he got caught at a light and lost them. She never returned home, and he and the girl's father searched the town for the next few days and never found her. But they did find Gary Ridgway and his truck. So they called the cops, and they showed up to question Gary. The cop didn't find anything out of the ordinary, and nobody had been found, so they didn't pursue him. Her body wasn't found for another 20 years. And this was kind of a thing back in the day. for prostitutes, they're what's considered less dead. Cops don't seem to investigate this as often because in that line of work, women tend to go missing because they ran away or they found a new life or they're just lost in the drug trade. It's unfortunate, but those women aren't usually investigated as much. That's why Gary Ridgway got away with this for so long. The police did keep tabs on him for a bit after that, though. But in May, he killed another woman. He changed his MO significantly. He attacked a 21-year-old waitress, someone who actually knew him personally. This is where he starts to escalate his theatrics. He took her body to the woods, put a grocery bag over her head, put two dead fish on her body, poured a bottle of wine over her torso, and put ground-up sausage meat in both her hands. He then laid beside her body and cried, which is extremely uncommon for any serial killer case. They don't usually show remorse immediately, and that's a very strange case of, I don't even know why he would cry. Maybe it was because of the he knew her personally, probably. By the end of 1983, 24 women had been found and many more reported missing in the area. It was speculated that the Green River Killer was to blame. And by the end of 1984, the total toll was at 42, and the investigators had basically zero evidence. Now, in February 1987, his number was at 46, and this is when he decided to do it again. He picked up another young woman, Bobby Jo Hayes, a mother of five children. Her remains weren't found until 1991. This is where it kind of took a turn. They started to realize at this point that several of the victims had green carpet fibers found on them. It was really the only connection to all these women they could find. Two people who were renting a room above Ridgway's garage showed the police pictures from inside the home, showing green carpet all over the place. That led them to finally look deeper into Gary Ridgway and get a search warrant. So on April 8th, 1987, they searched Gary Ridgway's home and workplace. Even though investigators entered the home and told Ridgway they knew it was him, they didn't find anything to take him away. The carpet had already been replaced. No stains were found. They took a saliva swab and went on their way. Technology wasn't quite where they needed it to be yet, but they knew that that swab might someday come in handy. And in 1988, Gary Ridgway got married again to a woman named Judith Lynch. That would be his final wife before he was finally caught in 2002. Now, for everyone around them, they seemed like the ideal couple. They were perfectly normal. The killing seemed to stop altogether. So I think he may have been happy and didn't have the urge for a while. She even went on to say, "I think I saved many young women during our time together. And for the most part, we were happy." She didn't even know anything about the murders or the fact that he was once investigated for this years prior until the cops showed up at their doorstep and took him away. This was in 2001. And she divorced him in 2002, shortly after his arrest. But like I said, it took until November 2001 for the technology to catch up to where they needed it. It was called Short Tandem Repeat, or STR for short. It tests saliva for DNA matches. They got a hit on him, but they needed something to bring him in. Luckily, Gary hadn't changed everything about himself. They caught him picking up an undercover police officer posing as a prostitute. That led to his arrest. They only had enough evidence to pin him with four murders. It was enough to sentence him with the death penalty. But the investigators were contacted by Ridgway's attorneys to offer a plea deal. If they took the death penalty off the table, he would confess to all the women who had been murdered and tell them where they are. They decided on the deal so the families could have closure, which does happen a lot. Most people think, no, kill him, but really, the families do want to know about their... It's much more hard for the families to wonder where their loved ones are than to know they're dead. It's as grim as that sounds, it is better to know. That way you can move on and grieve properly. In February 2003, he went to trial to plead guilty for 48 murders for 48 life sentences. Ridgway tried to apologize in his testimony, but a father of one of the victims lost his shit and started screaming at him. Obviously, Gary never got to finish his bullshit apology. One of Gary Ridgway's last statements uttered in court was, "I wanted to kill as many women I thought were prostitutes as I possibly could." He's just an absolute animal. They found the 49th body in 2010, and he received another life sentence. Gary Ridgway is, unfortunately, still an inmate at Washington State Penitentiary. During his confession, he constantly talked about how he loved that he did this. He wanted to be the biggest serial killer in American history. He said he was trying for 100 at least. And that is my short version of the piece of shit that we call Gary Ridgway, aka the Green River Killer. I don't feel like he is the biggest serial killer in American history. I don't think he got what he wanted. I do think he's a vile, disgusting creature that not everybody knows about, and I think it's important that this story be heard for the victims and the families. If anybody out there wants to send him some hate mail, you can go ahead and do that at the Washington State Penitentiary. Please do so. I think he's a vile, disgusting piece of shit, and he deserves every piece of hate that he gets. Well, that's going to do it for Corey's Killer Corner. Thanks for listening.